Hey, Danger Dan Jurz here with a quick announcement. Our next interstitial bonus content will be Daniel's Power Rangers mini campaign, and it will be the final one before the start of Season 2 officially begins. It's a soft Season 1 epilogue slash side story that will be releasing exclusively on Patreon, with its first episode dropping Wednesday, May 27th. Stick around after the episode to hear a sneak preview. More details about Season 2 will be coming soon, so keep an ear out and enjoy the episode. Hey, a quick heads up about this interview. It goes into a little heavier territory than we normally tend to cover on this show, so if you're sensitive to discussions of targeted censorship, reclaimed slurs, or loss of a loved one, we don't go into substantial detail about any of them, but be aware that those are topics we do broach. To quickly reaffirm our position in the discussion before we start, while D&D Dark is not a politically affiliated show, we do stand firmly allied with the trans and queer community and strongly oppose the current censorship push by organizations like Collective Shout. Thank you for your time. Now, on to the interview. Hello and welcome to Table Talk, a show where I chat with other creators in the TTRPG space about how they run their tables. I'm Danger Dan Jurz, the GM and host of D&D Dark, and joining us at the table today is a player, GM, and Crit Award-nominated TTRPG designer who has been featured in multiple actual play and TTRPG podcasts, Jellyfish Lines. Hello!
Hello, everybody. I'm Jellyfish Lines. My pronouns are he, him. I'm a silly goose.
Well, thank you for coming by to chat with us today. To get us started, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your history with the TTRPG community, and some of the projects that you've been involved in, including your 2025 Crit Award nominee, A Witch, A Gallows Bird?
God, where do I even start? I'm a queer trans creator from the Appalachia region of Northeast Ohio, Rust Belt born and raised. I have been heavily informed by my history within the Midwest, because Midwest is where TTRPGs as an art form and as a form of play was built into what it is today. If there's anything that is Midwestern heritage, it is TTRPGs. And some of the projects that I've been involved in have been not only A Witch, A Gallows Bird, which I wrote for a game jam last year in about 2 weeks. It was 2 weeks and I went it's done now, release. Then I plugged it into every single game jam bundle I could, where it's just this is my only big thing right now. And apparently that worked.
It's crazy what a time limit will do for your creativity.
Oh, absolutely. Other things I'm involved with, I'm involved in what is being colloquially coined as cigarette games by Darling Demon Eclipse, a trans woman who coined the term for these types of games. To give preface, I'm heavily involved in the space that is creating these types of games, as Itch is left, right, and center banning a lot of them and de-indexing them. And we're currently unsure of the state of these games right now in the TTRPG scene because, oh boy, pivot processors, we hate them.
Yeah, it's a rough time to be beholden to them right now.
It's bad. It's bad. But I think in order to understand this, I need to actually bring up the essay that Eclipse wrote, and CW for anti-gay slurs, but they're being reclaimed by queer and trans people and gay people. The original essay that Eclipse wrote is called Faggot Games and Urgent Warning. The very first heading is Take My Gay Little Hand. And it very much outlines her feelings after the election happened and some of the most clear sense of writing that I have seen in this is I agree with the leading philosophy, death before detransition. They'll have to take her estradiol from her cold dead hands, etc. But more crucially, death before normalcy, before assimilation, before agreement. I'm going to make TTRPGs far worse, far angrier, and far sexier than I have already, because it's one rebellious act of many, and because it feels like the rules are gone. Sure, there will likely be some anti-pornography laws floated or outright passed in the coming years, but it won't hold any weight with liberal institutions protected us. So why should we take their censorship seriously? There will be means to make and distribute our art. I believe this. How do I express this to you, the faggot games designer who is most likely to read a blog about TTRPGs with such an aggressive name? You have to do it now, and loudly, and into the future. You have to make them. And she goes in and outlines, like, what are these games and the loud queer sexuality, the departure from, like, the flattening of popular axioms around player and character consent for a more modern safety framework that's more interpersonal and robust. A central rule for, like, essentially, like, kink. They aren't necessarily about these types of things, but they loop back. And a focus on challenging and unexpected visuals, blending the cozy and macabre, the outside with the mainstream, and keep people guessing. The entire part of this is just like, what do we do when censorship is at the door? What do you do when fascism is at your door? Because art is not praxis, but it can be the vehicle for one. That's basically what I'm involved with, like, majorly right now. It's like that. It's that movement of games.
Yeah, that's... don't take my silence or hesitation as any kind of judgment. I'm mostly just trying to wrap my head around how to respectfully approach this, because I'll admit it's a subject I was not prepared to get into, but I do want to give it the proper focus and attention that it deserves. That push towards visibility is so crucial and so critical. If you look back at any time that society has made significant gains for the marginalized, it has come largely from the normalization of their existence. So trying to push for that visibility and trying to get that message out to the people who don't understand that these people exist and these people are people.
I think that's the thing that Faggot Games is trying to not necessarily do. We're not trying to say we're people. We're saying we're here and we will never be erased. We're not trying to appeal. We're trying to help others like us find each other. One of the biggest things that I also discuss about in TTRPGs is disability, because I'm a disabled queer guy. And I keep thinking about, like, Section 504, because how disability rights laws and how every single right was won in this country was not an appeal to power. It was prying their rights from power's hands. It took blood and sweat and tears and so many dead. And yet we're here, and how far are we from all of them, actually? We're not that far. Sorry, chat. We got political early.
Yeah, no worries. And I don't want to downplay the importance of any of that. And I just want to make sure that we're both on the same page here, because I'm not trying to say any of that as an appeal to power. You're absolutely right. I just didn't phrase my point super well. What I was trying to get at before was a lot of the gains of the Pride movement in terms of the normalization of the queer community was less a plea for mercy than it is a declaration of existence, because from the general public who have less interaction with the marginalized communities, it's very easy to write off people that you don't interact with as people who don't exist. And it is the normalization of that existence in the face of everything else that makes those gains more possible, which does require a lot of danger. It does require a lot of sacrifice, and it does require a lot of upsetting the bounds of normalcy so that that barrier of what is normal is moved. Because the general public getting on board with the existence of the queer community came once the general public started to understand, oh, I know who that person is. I have a face to put to that label. This isn't some hypothetical idea of a queer person that exists only on paper. That's my neighbor.
Yeah.
That's kind of more what I'm trying to get at. But I do want to basically just kind of set the record that I agree with you. And I think that that kind of unapologetic declaration of identity is important and critical in this time when censorship is more and more on the rise, which, to give a little bit of context to any listeners who don't know what you're talking about with Itch, basically what happened is the far-right censorship group Collective Shout has been putting a lot of pressure on payment processors like Visa, MasterCard, and PayPal to not do business with any sites that host not-safe-for-work content, which has since led to a massive purge and de-indexing of adult-focused content on itch.io, with other platforms at risk of following suit. And it's a major problem for a few reasons, not the least of which being it's an infringement on free speech rights, and it's a pretense to target queer and marginalized creators with plausible deniability. Anyway, yeah, we got very political very early on. I do want to circle back around to focus this on you and your works, because your works do touch on a lot heavier subject matter and tend to focus on some of these more, what really shouldn't be politically controversial discussion points, but have become more politically controversial. There's a real push away from discussing uncomfortable but necessary topics. So I want to analyze some of the works that you've put together. For example, you have games that deal with grief. You have games that deal with domestic abuse. You have games that deal with marginalization. I want to explore what led you to make games surrounding these topics and why TTRPG was the medium of choice. I know that you said that it's kind of reclaiming TTRPGs as being a local part of the Rust Belt and being such a cultural touchstone. And with your identity in the queer community, it's kind of inextricable from those more politicized subjects. But I want to break down some of your specific games, what led you to want to write and make games in those topics and subjects and in this way. So, for example, just kind of skimming your itch page, you have After Orpheus, which is an exercise in processing grief of a deceased partner. You have the LARP that you've described as a LARP that no one should ever play, Huldra, Banshee, Selkie, Yukiona, which is less a LARP than it is an exercise in recognizing domestic abuse, as well as, even though it's a slightly more lighthearted approach to it, your Crit Award-nominated game, A Witch, A Gallows Bird, deals with persecution in the Salem witch trials. So with all of these focal points and with the subject matter that you've chosen to examine, what was your process like as a designer in approaching those topics, deciding on them, and making them?
If we're talking about like these games in order, right? The first big one that I actually wrote was A Witch, A Gallows Bird. A Witch, A Gallows Bird actually came about due to like how Moms for Liberty and how libs of TikTok, I swear to God, I'm so sorry, usually targeted queer folks who were just online at some points that would mention they were teachers and not even like in their classrooms. And it was like very much inspired by like the whole of the groomer panic that was going on. And it sucked.
That is interesting. And to kind of unpack the kind of modern parallels with that, I know that the Salem witch trials were a big touch point during the Red Scare, and we're kind of seeing that a lot again. So it makes a lot of sense to use that as a touch point for the modern persecution of a different boogeyman that far-right extremists are rallying and panicking around.
And like the witchcraft that is within A Witch, A Gallows Bird is more implied to be just a natural state of existence for people. They are not a danger. They are not anything to the community. They are what the community makes of them, what the community thinks of them. And the witches within A Witch, A Gallows Bird, the witchcraft is the queerness, essentially. I have met no trans mask or trans man that has not had like a borderline obsession with the Salem witch trials. I have not met one. If you can show me a trans mask or a trans man that has not been obsessed with the Salem witch trials, I'm going to say you are lying.
That it makes a lot of sense because of the parallels of persecution, and the witch aesthetic in several different directions tends to be reclaimed for a lot more countercultural associations. So makes perfect sense that that would be such a staple of the trans community.
Absolutely. We love witches in this house. And if we're heading into the next one, Huldra, Banshee, Selkie, Yukiona. So the game that actually inspired directly all of it is actually A Helpless Thing on the Table. Those two games do not exist without the other existing. A Helpless Thing on the Table came to existence because I watched Eraserhead after David Lynch died. And then I held the David Lynch game jam. And oh my God, did I find myself as that little tiny baby on that table, like the little Eraserhead baby. There is two types of people that want to take care of the Eraserhead baby. There's an abled person's view of the Eraserhead baby, and there's a disabled person's view of the Eraserhead baby. Usually I find that the able-bodied person's view of the Eraserhead baby is, that's hell, because that's the worst thing I can imagine for myself physically to be in. And every disabled person I've met who has watched that film has said, that is hell because I've lived that. And it's just looking at part of the helplessness, right? That like disabled people are sometimes enforced into, like government enforced poverty with like disability payments being so low. And I think I asked the question in like the author's note here, what is a good disabled in an ableist society? And the answer is there is none. There is no such thing as a good disabled person in an ableist society. And that game touches on like abuse that a lot of disabled children actually face in their day-to-day lives. And I wanted to bring awareness to that in a way that people would be looking at that point, because they were looking at David Lynch's work. But I also, as a disabled artist, I put myself into that film because David Lynch, God bless that man, he was very much the art is what you make of it and it's what you think of it. And that's what I like read into that, was a disabled perspective. Huldra Banshee, Soki Yuka-Onna came out of that idea of like, there's things in this space, especially in TTRPGs, that people are not talking about that are relatively important to talk about. And one of such things is ableism. Another such thing is domestic abuse. And that, this was a rough game to write. I almost stopped writing it. I almost stopped working on it. And then I gave it to a couple friends who read it. And
I believe it.
There were people who straight up told me, don't work on this, nor release this as like an actual LARP to be played. And I went like, okay. So I almost stopped working on it completely. And then I gave it to one of my friends and they said, why don't you finish this? And I went like, okay. And I finished it.
I think it is a very poignant project, and it does touch upon a very real and very necessary conversation. One of the comments on your page that I thought was a really interesting one, as one of the reactions that that project got, was that this project in this state would probably make for a very effective immersive theater experience more so than a LARP, which I don't know that I fully agree with, but I can see the value in that. And I think that it does bring about a necessary conversation and frame things in a way that people should be thinking of and should be aware of. It's a great way to, as difficult as it is, to recognize those patterns so that you know and can intervene or can seek help. Because awareness is a massive barrier to help in a lot of these types of situations. It's very easy for a domestic abuse situation to go either unnoticed or unnoticed enough.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that it is very valuable, and I do commend you for making and bringing it to completion.
Thank you so much.
I want to kind of like piggyback off of that and ask, why was TTRPG the medium you chose to explore this topic and to deliver that project in?
This is the medium I know. This is the medium that people know me for. I don't have much pull in the fiction space. I don't have much pull in like wider activist spaces. But I have pull here. And by God, I'm going to use my voice where I can.
Excellent answer. So please continue on to After Orpheus.
Okay, so this was for J. Dragon's A Jam in Silence, which is like how to strategically use silence, like how in Wanderhome uses silence within like how a session begins. I decided to use silence throughout the whole of it. And okay, so this is Jellyfish Line's Trauma Time that I'm going to laugh at and you are all going to be horrified by, because that's how this goes. So I asked my partner, AJ, or King Dapper Wombat, a couple weeks before I graduated college, actually. Hey, is the place you work at hiring? And he said, I don't know, but I'll take a look because I've been feeling sick lately. A few days pass, and that was like Sunday. It's now Friday. And I get a call from him, middle of the day, and I thought it was weird. So I picked up immediately, and I heard this woman's voice on the phone that I never heard before. She asked me if this is like a name I chose for myself, and I said, yes. And she asked how I knew AJ. And I said, he's a friend of mine, because I didn't know who this was. And then she said that she was his mother and he had passed away. He had just turned 29, not even 3 weeks before. Pulmonary embolism. Didn't even know he had it. And it was bad. It was a bad time all around. I think I blacked out for about 3 weeks after. I think the only things I remember was telling Logan and telling Improv and RPG about it. And then I blacked out until the funeral. And I blacked out again until June. And the funeral was also my graduation day. Again, I'm saying this with a straight face because it's been over a year. And I've been to like three different forms of therapy for it. And also gone on meds for it. But thumbs up me. At least I can get through this without crying now. But After Orpheus is a way of essentially grappling with something that other folks in TTRPGs, I don't think, are grappling with enough, is that we are freaking mortal. We are mortal and we are fragile and we ain't really good at preserving our work. We ain't good at that, especially in online mediums. And this is kind of something that I look at as a form of therapy, but in a way that's very different, where it's like my poetry professor, CJ Malone, over at Kent State, said this during our teaching poetry in the schools course, is that we are not the therapist, nor is poetry therapy. It is the vehicle towards therapy and towards healing. And that's how I view my games, especially games like this, is that it is the vehicle towards grappling with grief and how to live with it. And After Orpheus is kind of like looking at grief, not only as Orpheus, but as Eurydice. You love someone enough to turn back, and you love someone enough to keep looking forward.
That's a very powerful metaphor, and I think it's very admirable approaching these types of topics in these ways. It sounds like it would be an extremely difficult but cathartic process to make projects like these and to pour so much of yourself into these heavier topics. What has it been like from you, and what have you learned from doing these projects, both as a person and as a designer and writer?
As a person, you got to work in a way that protects your heart, right? You got to work in a way that protects you and your mental health. But as an artist, I say fuck it all the time. I say no, because I have an unhealthy relationship with my work.
Very do as I say, not as I do.
Yes, as every artist does, we have a little bit of an unhinged, unhealthy relationship with our work. It's okay, though. We deal with it. But it's also looking at creation of TTRPGs, not only from like a perspective of being a creator, because I fucking hate the term content creator. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. But I also see it as being a creative, as a writer, as a designer, and as like in general an artist, because that is what you are doing. You are creating art, less than a product, but art that other people play and have experiences with, and actively try to separate myself from this idea in this modern internet age of en masse immediate consumption, which is so much of what it is, even in fast fashion and like a video release cycle that's like three videos a week. And like, God, are you people okay? And it's just, I have to separate myself from that point in order to remain sane, because if I don't, I will lose it.
It's a tricky line to walk.
Absolutely it is. You have to create in a way that protects your heart, but you're never going to create something that is meaningful to you, less somebody else, but to you, if you're constantly thinking about what other people will say about it, what other people will think of it. Sometimes you just got to create and put your whole heart and pour your soul onto a page and not worry what somebody else is going to say or think or react. Sometimes you just got to do something.
Absolutely. And I feel like any creatives in this space working on, even if they are more lighthearted projects, can relate to that need and that desire to bring something to fruition. Which, to lighten things up a little bit, there are other works of yours on your Itch page that are dealing with less heavy topics.
Yeah.
That are more traditional and draw upon things like Monster Hearts and Powered by the Apocalypse. So to change the discussion to a more lighthearted direction, what are some of the systems that have influenced you the most as a designer and writer and as a player? And what lessons from the different systems that you've played do you bring to your creation process?
Okay, so this is actually really fun. So fun fact about me, despite the fact that all of my games are basically like story games, I started in trad games and not D&D. I started in Call of Cthulhu. And a big aspect of Call of Cthulhu that like I really like is the tension that it has, at least in very early game, where it's just like you don't know what is coming and you know something bad is going to happen because it's a game of Call of Cthulhu. If you don't know, why are you here? I mean that as a joke, but I'm serious. Please research the games you are getting into. If we are not all on the same page, things go sideways and the game can sometimes not happen. But continuing on with that, it's just like looking at different aspects of like PBTA, which has taught me essentially like you can get weird with it. You can get strange with it. Lyric games really taught me I can get weird with it. Lyric games are a whole can of worms themselves. I love lyric games. Sometimes a TTRPG is reading. Sometimes play is reading a word on a page and living within that sense of how the word sits within your head and how you like try to struggle to comprehend that, like how to do that. Sometimes that's a whole game in and of itself. Big brain theoretical shit going on in lyric game spaces. Love it. The trad game space really brings in a lot of like old style, like role play things, but like there's also that issue of not every play style for every game family and game lineage is going to fit another game lineage. Trad games are not going to fit Card from Brindlewood games, at least in most play styles, because people will ask, but how, if the answer is up to the players, how do they know what happened to the village? And I'm like, you get clues, and the players come up with that answer based off the clues, and then they roll to see if they're right or not. That's how that functions. That's essentially bare bones. That is how CFB answering a question functions. And I think CFB is still cooking. Essentially, somebody's baking pumpkin bread and they're still like getting the bread together. It's still in the oven. You can smell it. It smells delicious. And I'm like, give me the pumpkin bread. The pumpkin bread isn't done yet. And I'm so mad. But it's also just like looking at it from aspects of game design, where it's like not everything is going to be everyone's cup of tea. Not everything that you design for is going to be like the other thing. It doesn't mean that these are impossible to reconcile. It just means you're going to have a tougher time reconciling these. And if you want to try and combine them, it's also going to be very tough to combine them. It's also why I like Monster Hearts, is because like it's just good. It's just good. It was one of the first things I designed for, which was very fun. I basically wrote like a small town for Monster Hearts, a little fan small town, so that felt great.
Yeah, you can't discount the fun factor of it. Grappling with a thing that you enjoy has a value in and of itself, and sometimes that's the only value a thing needs to provide for it to be meaningful to you. So absolutely more power to you on that front.
Yeah, I like Monster Hearts. I think it's fun.
So you've kind of touched upon this in a couple of different ways. You've dropped a lot of design philosophy in this discussion already. So for anybody wanting to create their own works, to give some more concrete and specific targeted advice, is there anything that you would say to somebody just starting out wanting to get involved in creating either a hack of an existing TTRPG or their own TTRPG, wanting to basically create projects within this space? Is there any advice or wisdom you would impart on somebody just coming into this, or a thing that you would tell your past self that you wish you knew sooner?
General advice is to crack open several small things first. It gets your work out there, gets you noticed faster, and people start noticing you more as you put out smaller things of great quality than larger things of like okay quality, essentially. Basically, start small, do it well, your work will only benefit. And another one comes from the author Gretchen Felker Martin, or Scum Believable on Blue Sky. I love her so much. Her basic advice, which is mostly for writing, but I also apply it to TTRPGs a lot, is that in order to write well, you need to read and just fucking do it. You can't be scared. Not everything is going to come from theory. Sometimes you just got to fucking write, and it's a bitch, but it has to get done. That's like the two biggest pieces of advice. And also, be in community with your community. The TTRPG scene is not a community. The community is who you surround yourself with and trust and love and support one another as. I mean that in the sense of the TTRPG community still has issues with racism and ableism and sexism and homophobia and transphobia and like trans misogyny. Every issue that plagues society still plagues TTRPGs as a wider whole. And we have to start thinking of a split in the space between industry, community, and like hobby and professional hobby. If you're in TTRPGs professionally, you know what I mean. Like, you know the differences.
Yeah, any medium, once it gets sufficiently prolific enough and takes hold and spreads to a wide enough net, will have all of the same microcosm problems that society as a whole has. So that is very much still the case within the TTRPG community. I love your advice of trying to narrow down and finding a more specific community that you can readily engage with. I think being able to zoom in to people that you work well with, get along with, and have access to is an essential creative tool. The community that I lean on for D&D Dark are largely people that are local to me, people that I've interacted with a bunch, personal friends and creatives that I know I work well with and can really sponge a lot of ideas out of. And they are indispensable. So leaning on those personal connections that you have to create your own smaller community, and even if you don't necessarily have people immediately, building that community by outreaching to people in similar circumstances as you that share similar values and ideals that have common interests will pay dividends.
Absolutely.
So very much love that advice.
Yeah. Also, the pillars of the space are usually very busy. They usually cannot find times in their schedule to get you in to speak to you about like game design advice. I'm going to give you the advice that they give literally everybody. Go to your peers and support one another, as always. Another one that I will always give is be nice to trans women. They made this space what it is today. Be nice to trans women, or I will fucking hurt you. I don't know how I will do it, but I will fight you through the screen on your phone and on your computer.
Well, and even beyond the TTRPG community, the trans community tends to be at the forefront of pushes for minority change. I know a big part of the civil rights movement was only possible because of the trans community within the Black community. And a lot of pushes for gender equality came from the queer community as well. They've always been very vocal, very upfront, and very active in pushing not only for their own representation, but for equality for everyone. So nothing but respect for the trans community in everything that they go through and achieve.
Absolutely. Oh, God. I'm also just like, respect sex workers. Don't be a dick to sex workers. It's just general life advice. They're just doing their job and they're providing a service. just be polite. And I mean this as somebody who came into the TTRPG scene with my first job being that, as like a camboy, and coming into this scene and seeing how the space treated sex work and sex and sexuality and conversations around like sex and sexuality in like a safer like way that like sex positivity spaces were having them, and how TTRPGs just were not having them. I went like, oh, I am not safe here. I am not going to say shit yet. And it's only within the past, God, year that I've been really public about it.
One of the silver linings to the mess that everything is right now is I've been seeing a lot more visibility and a lot more proponents of more marginalized communities in general. I've been within the last year or two, I've been hearing a lot more pro-sex worker advocation than I think I ever have prior to that. And there's more people being more vocally on the side of the marginalized than I have ever seen before. Now, I hate how necessary that is right now.
Absolutely.
But that is a silver lining to what is going on. And I think so much just comes down to treating people like people.
Absolutely. You gotta be kind. One last piece of advice that I swear to God I'm going to cut myself off after this. recognize when things are in good faith and recognize bad faith.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to do it. You got to learn how to do it. And if you can recognize bad faith, hit the block button. Just do it. Just say conversation over. Goodbye.
You'll definitely save yourself a lot of time and stress.
Yes.
It's a lesson that I am still trying to internalize for myself.
I believe in you. You can do it.
But anyway, we have covered a lot of ground in this conversation, and I really appreciate everything that you've brought to the forefront. As we're starting to wrap up, I want to make sure that we're not leaving anything on the table that is important to get to. So do you have any other miscellaneous things that you want to add, bring up, talk about before we wrap up? Anything that we may not have covered yet?
Okay. Make a sexy TTRPG. I swear to God, I will, like, people will help you. People will help you. People can help you. Literally, I will give you a link to a server. You just gotta be normal about shit. Make a sexy, horny TTRPG. I will love you forever and give you, like, a little flower for it. I will give you, like, just a little flower. Generally, be kind to one another. Respect one another. Don't be, like, shady and shit. Just don't. Don't be. Because, fun fact, Whisper networks fucking exist, and we talk. We talk a lot. If you're going to network in this space, in any space, actually, literally just trying to be legitimate friends rather than trying to work a hustle gets you so much further. Just trying to just be friends. Sometimes the corporate world works like kindergarten. I am not joking. And if we're going to talk about like anything that's upcoming.
Yes, please do.
Okay. So currently in the works is Public Access Playback Static Revamped. So that is a revamping of my original Playback Static podcast by Jason Cordova and The Gauntlet. So that is being worked on. Just released today as of midnight on 7/30/2025 was Arkham Herald. Hold the byline, the prologue, which is so freaky and people love it already. And I'm like, nyah, 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 good. And I'm currently working on another TTRPG called Traces, and I'm very happy about it. So I don't know if you've ever seen the Cave of Hands in Argentina, but that cave makes me cry. It has the little like kids' hands all over the walls with like their hands outlined. And I'm like going to go sob because it reminds me of those little like tiny turkeys that like little kids make with their little crayons and shit in their hands. And I'm like, I'm going to go sob now. essentially, that is what that game is inspired by.
All right. Well, definitely we'll be keeping a lookout for that. Are there any other links that you want to drop for either games that are currently out, stuff that will be out by the time this is upcoming, stuff that will be out in a while, any social links, anything like that? Please drop those now.
Follow me at jellyfishlines.itch.io on both itch.io if it survives. And also on Blue Sky, please just follow me. I give good hot takes and I am very gay and very weird on the internet. I swear to God, I will not let you down. Or who knows, I might. And I might give you a laugh about it. But, you know, at least you'll have some entertainment. And Also, you can find all of my stuff at jellyfishlines.card, CARRD.CO. That's like my landing page site. It's where you can find everything and like basically see everything I'm doing, including actual plays. I love you, Actual Play. Actual Play also makes me want to bang my head against the wall, but that's a conversation for another time.
I get that entirely. But anyway, thank you so much for coming on and chatting with me. This was a difficult conversation, but I really appreciate and got a lot out of it. So thank you so much for being here, chatting with me, and for being unapologetically you.
Thank you. And I really hope that nothing I said came off as rude. And I really just hope that you had a good time, too.
Yeah, this was a great conversation, and I genuinely did get a lot out of it. So thank you so much, and thank you to all of you for listening. One more time, everybody. I'm Danger Dan Jurs, the GM and host of D&D Dark. I've been chatting with Jellyfish Lines, and this has been Table Talk. And I hope you enjoyed what we brought to the table.
Have a good night.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Table Talk, created, hosted, and edited by myself, Danger Dan Jurs, with artwork by Jordan Nelson. Our guest this episode was Jellyfish Lines. Links to his work can be found on the episode description. If you're interested in being a guest on this show, reach out to us at dndarkpodcast@gmail.com. Our theme song and outro was created by Jeremy Vellucci. Check out more of his work on Instagram at jeremyvellucci_wreckoftime. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time we have a guest take a seat at the table.
Hello and welcome to Super Stryford Regency Rangers, a comedy action adventure loosely based on Sentient Sensibility by 9th Level Games and starring some of Stratford's most colorful creatures.
You may call me Adrian Alucard Depeche. If you know what my father did, it could be bad.
Looking matronly with her face hidden behind a fan stands the Kuchisake Ona. Doesn't everyone think she's beautiful?
My name is Sir Gordon Topham Hatt. Pleasure to meet you. I like to make stuff go boom.
My name is Richard Milo Renfield.
He's back.
Yay. He's just still like that. Oh, God.
Hi, I'm Jordan, and I play Frederick the Loafer.
My God, is this the dude that was like in that one episode of D&D Dark?
It is the deepest cut of inside jokes that could be made.
Are you married, miss?
I am not married.
Kuchisake leans immediately to the group, just pulls a quick huddle. We need to get this trollop out of this fucking town.
We go fight?
I meet you at dawn tomorrow morning.
It's date.
I hope to find love like that someday.
She says that I hit her. I did not hit her. It's not bullshit. I did not. And as you're walking, he just keeps following you.
Oh, God. I believe I have made an unfortunate ally.
On his hips are two pistols. On his back are two rifles. And on his chest, a triple barrel shotgun.
Oh, my God.
I will destroy all of you and destroy this town.
D&D Dark presents Super Stratford Regency Rangers, premiering Wednesday, May 27th, only on patreon.com/DNDarkPodcast.